I'm Blair Sanderson.
And I'm Ken McIntosh.
And this is the Surf Fantasy Podcast.
You!
Oh yeah, these guys are freaking out, coming out of their skin. Seabass just came at it with so much speed and flair. It was absolutely amazing. Big set out the back coming through. The coaches are so...
So there we go, coming out of the finals at
Margaret
River.
Yeah, Seabass, man. You gotta love it.
It was good. I think that everybody loves it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm going to start picking my winners of the contest just based on, like, who shouldn't win, but who would I be really happy if they somehow managed to?
That's right.
And well, that's who I'll pick to win the contest.
It's because he did fairly well at Bell's, and, you know, that he has this reputation as being such a streaky sort of guy who can't quite put it all together that because I had him at Bell's.
Yeah, I remember
you
saying.
Dropped him.
Yeah, and I was suggesting that you drop him because I didn't think
did
I mean,
you
coming
say,
off.
That was your fault?
I may have been. I just remembered his last season and, like you said, inconsistent. But, you know, we can get to that a bit later, too, because I have some opinions on whether or not he really should be the champ.
Really?
Despite nothing but love for Seabass. Hmm. But we should do a little bit of housekeeping.
Based
first.
On that particular heat, I'm just curious. Or,
yeah, based
okay.
on the last
okay.
heat.
Okay.
I just,
yeah.
It's on that one big turn. I'm not quite sure. Hmm. I was as into that sort of grab rail.
Did you see? Because he did one in heat at the beginning of the contest, too. Who was he against? But he ended up losing that heat, but it was amazing.
I mean, I think he surfed really well the whole contest. And, I mean, he had more nines than anyone. He was obviously, you know, one of the best performers. But just in that last heat, it seemed they were really rewarding sort of the aggression of that turn.
Because it wasn't totally smooth.
It wasn't totally smooth. And I'd argue that that hiccup in the middle after he grabs the rail... it didn't even look as powerful as it could have been had it been both aggressive and smooth at the same time. And when you compare that to the similar scoring wave that Julian Wilson got, where he had this, it was still a powerful turn, but it was much more swooping and brought it around a lot more smooth. I mean, I'm not the only one saying it. You see it on the forums online too, that I can't help but wonder if, you know, that one turn was a bit overscored, but I think it all goes back to some inconsistency in the scoring across the board. But anyway, before we get too far into it, we gotta give a little shit out to the viewers here because we never do this. Hey, if you're listening,
did you say shout out or did you say shit out? Just
I said shout out,
okay.
My man.
Okay.
Sorry, I need to drink some more coffee here. But anyway, if you're listening to us on iTunes, you gotta rate and review the show. If you want more people to see it and listen to it, it'll pump us up in the ratings. Yeah. And you know, who knows? Maybe someday. We'll have a sponsor.
Yeah.
And you can listen to ads.
Rate, review, and repeat, I would say. Just don't do it. Don't do it for one episode, right? Because I think they're all, it's a separate little entity each show.
And you watch it, you listen to it on Stitcher. Is there a similar function there?
Yeah, you give it on that one. You give it the old thumbs up.
All right. Well,
boom.
I'm never going to get an Android, but for all you guys out there, no offense.
The other thing, you know, also on our WordPress, the main website, they could subscribe to the podcast.
Yeah.
Or what you do there, I guess, is like you're subscribing to the blog. Anyway, also, in terms of housekeeping as well, we should announce that we now have a Clubhouse.
Yeah, and you're all welcome to join.
And this is the other piece of housekeeping that we need to take care of, is that this is on the Surfer Magazine, Surf Fantasy
exactly.
League.
Yeah.
But anyway, so if you want to find the Clubhouse, it's Surf Fantasy Podcast. And here is an incentive for joining that podcast or that club. You're looking at me like,
yeah,
I'm going to offer up money. No, that's
I can't
not what
vote
I'm talking
for
about.
This.
No, I'm just saying that if you are tired of losing or not doing very well in the clubhouses that you currently are in, join this one and you could be an instant winner. Take the lead right away.
Yeah. Because there's only three of us so far?
Yeah, and I got 2,600 results, and
oh
I think you do,
God,
too.
Oh, my God, don't even get me started on the results.
Yeah, yeah, so that's some guy did join already, and he's in second place.
Yeah.
So congratulations to...
And maybe we should go big time. I'll throw it out here. The winner of the clubhouse at the end of the year, I'll mail them something. I don't know what.
Yeah, you'll get something in the mail.
It might be a broken fin.
Right.
It might be, you know, $10 Canadian.
But is that right?
You'll get something.
I was wondering about that, too, that maybe capitalizing on the fact that we're in Canada, I was going to say that we will write your name in the snow with a breaking wave in the background. It will take a picture of it.
And then we'll piss on it.
Yeah. I was going to, or maybe just write the name in piss. Whatever.
Hey, anyway, you'll get a prize.
Something unique is coming your way if you win in the men's category at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And
but back to your point. Make it clear, we're doing fantasy surfer here. We're not doing that WSL game.
WSL. That's right. Partially because there is already a podcast specifically dedicated to that league. Yeah.
But also because this is the one that we've been doing since... I mean, I've been doing fantasy surfer since it began.
Before
there
was even a WSL.
Before the WSL existed.
Or their
ASP.
Or their fantasy league, right? Because their league is new.
Oh, it is. It was new last year, and then but it's got a lot of traction. But I know I love the fantasy surfer. message board, shout out Groundswell.
That's right.
It's, you know, raw. I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah. And I'll even just point out too that it's a much more fulfilling experience. Like with the way that they have it, I know that we may have talked about this before, but I've really managed to clarify it in my mind why I prefer the one that we do. You know, with the WSL one, you know, you have that tier, the top tier, but there's no difference between the players. You know what I mean? That in Fantasy Surfer, the top tier, let's say the top 10 or top 4 or 5, whatever, there's a huge difference in terms of the price even between the top 4 guys.
Yeah,
so there's still a big difference between whether you pick DeSouza versus whoever else is in that tier.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more subtlety to it. Yeah, yeah,
totally.
Exactly.
So anyway, so that's the one that we like. Okay, so I guess that's... Oh, and then also send us an email to surffantasy@gmail.com if you want to get in touch with us that way. The thing is, though, so if you join the clubhouse, you can get in touch with us through the clubhouse message board.
Yeah, keep it
so
hot.
That's the way to do it. Anyway, yeah, so I guess we kind of leaked that little bit of information that we both did terribly in that last round.
Yeah, man, it was tough. Like, especially coming off the big scores we had in the previous contest, and it just left me a little underwhelmed, the whole thing. And I don't know, I think I might have a bad habit of judging a contest based on my own results at the contest. So a contest where I don't do well, I'm left feeling like it was a bad contest, like it was the
right
contest's,
yeah,
fault.
It was the contest's fault.
But in this case, I mean, it really was just a cutback contest. I mean, there's a few exciting turns, a few errors, but
that's
it was
why
just,
the grab
rail, lame,
that grab rail down carve. I the thing is, the one in the final wasn't as good as the other one that he'd done. I think it was in either the first or the second heat of the whole contest. This is seats we're talking
agreed
about.
Yeah,
and he did one and it looked amazing, like, yeah. And no one else was doing it, and I saw a lot. To me, I haven't seen the down carve used as much as I have in this contest. I thought it was pretty,
yeah. I mean, I'm
there.
Not arguing that it wasn't a good turn. I'm,
yeah,
just arguing
comparing
that when you
thing.
Compare the two top rides in that final,
right,
I think the grab rail into what was sort of a relatively weak second turn and no real strong finish on the section compared to the wave that Julian got less for, that started with a big powerful high swooping turn and,
yeah,
then arguably two better turns, was just a better wave and better enough that I think you could make an argument that Julian should have won that final.
Hmm. By the way, you had Ibelli in this contest, which few people did.
Yeah, I think that's the only good decision I made.
Yeah, Ibelli was a good decision on your, in fact, I think I have that somewhere. Yeah, look at this. You got to really scroll down to even find him. But it was like in the teens, I think, in terms of who picked him. So you did well there. You,
yeah,
did well,
and
there.
Kaio's the guy, man. Like, I mean, it brings me to the whole John John conversation, because I think that was another great heat where Kaio managed to take out John John.
Yeah.
And that was also the controversial heat with the dueling airs.
Yeah.
John John's sort of flat spinner that was super smooth,
yeah,
not very high, compared to Kaio's sort of clutch air at the end, like tail high.
But a little
a
uglier
more elevation.
To me, though.
A little uglier.
A little uglier.
And I think it goes to the point, like, I think Kaio's one of those guys that he has that sort of, I mean, it's all the cliches, the Brazilian fire, but he seems clutch. It seems like when it comes down to the end of it, you know, he's always going to finish his ride. And when he needs a big move, he's going to pull that move. Where John John, I was thinking a lot about John John because I want him to do well. And
yeah,
I picked him up despite saying, I think two podcasts ago, he'd never be on my team again. Picked him up at this podcast or this contest. And yeah, he just couldn't deliver, man.
Yeah.
I think he's a victim of just the poor waves that were on offer. Like, I think he finds it really hard. Despite all this talk of the renewed motivation he has this year, I just think he finds it really hard to play the game.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's motivated to win, but he's not motivated to win in junky waves the way you have to win.
Yeah.
By, you know, forcing a score, maybe going for a lesser move than you're capable of, but one you know that will be popular with the judges. I don't know what his problem is.
I'll go back to what I've been saying from day one, is that he has been conditioned to surf for clips, for video clips, right? And I was even thinking, I was in the water today and I was thinking about it like that. If you're in the water and what you're really trying to do is just produce magic for the camera, you could do a couple of amazing moves in like a single session, but that isn't what wins you entire contests, right? You have to be thinking an entirely different mindset. And I still think that, like, even, you know, when then he was out of the contest, or maybe the contest was still going, or it was like a lay day or something,
yeah,
but there was that crazy air that was going around. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
And then I think that
best air of the contest,
yeah,
people are calling
but
it.
But he
it
gets juice from that,
contest,
right? So people,
yeah,
come up to him like, yo, man, you know, like he would get attention,
oh, yeah,
and all kinds of buzz for doing that. And then it's like, no, bro, that's not why you're here, right? Like,
yeah,
and I think that you can't live in
those
two.
You need the big turn, the swooping cutback, and then your little, you know, re-entry onto the rocks.
And so I just think that he'll never produce. I know that he won once, and I think it was Portugal.
I think he could win a world title if you had a dream season where you're talking 8 out of the 11 events running in solid surf. And argue he could still turn it around. I mean, if you went Fiji in big surf, Chopes in big surf, and the Europe Pipe in big surf, and one of those two European contests actually gets swell and you have those dumpy barrels.
Because we're saying that he's not clutch, but I would say he is clutch in the barrel.
Yeah, that's the thing. He can't help himself. I mean, he almost can't fail when it's barreling in a lot of ways.
To get to the strategy on surfer...
I would say barreling inconsistent. Because he's not the type of guy that's going to win in a barreling contest with long lulls because he can't play the priority game as well as he should.
Right. So in terms of, it's so funny because we both picked, you had him, right? I mean, so this is the thing. Yeah, everybody had him. 87.
Yeah.
So I've been giving this a lot of thought. And so, you know, it's funny because it feels like there's no downside almost to picking him. Because if he doesn't do well, everybody had him. So, you know, you're not really at that much of a disadvantage. In fact, a lot of the winners, I don't have, by the way, a segment on habits of high achievers in terms of the whatever, but I did have a look that a lot of the top 10 did have John and still managed to be, you know, number one in terms of that contest, right? You know, but the thing is that it just leaves me lacking in terms of the enjoyment of watching him surf. When I know if he loses, well, doesn't matter because everybody else had him. Yeah. And if he wins, there's nothing to celebrate because everybody has him.
Yeah, it's like, so where's the upside?
There's no gratification for me, you know, if he does well, and it's not that much of a disappointment so he doesn't do well.
And you could almost make the same argument about him on an emotional level in a weird way. Because it's like when he does win and perform really well, it's almost like, well, that's John. It's what he's supposed to do.
Right.
But usually he doesn't, and then you're just left bummed out because you know he can do better.
I mean, the thing is, at least if you have him and not everybody does, and he does what he's supposed to do, you can, you know, congratulate yourself for having the wherewithal to pick him. You know what I mean? Yeah. So
I just think all the way around, you're right. There's very little upside, and I don't think you'll see him back on my team.
So never again?
Maybe Pipe.
Okay. Because I'm going to agree with you there, because I still feel like it's funny, too, with John, is that... Because we'll look ahead to Rio a little bit, and you think, well, maybe he didn't do so well there. Maybe that wasn't, but you know, Rio, you know, he's got a good air game, and so maybe he'll pull it out there. Yeah. I'd be interested to see what the numbers are. I'd say that he would still probably, what do you think? Take a guess on where he'll land percentage pickup at Rio.
70? 60? I think he'll still be really high at 70. And just wait till the mid-year shuffle when they reshuffle the seating. If he keeps doing as bad as he's done in these
first couple contests,
all of a sudden he's going to be cheap. He's going to be at the bottom, and he's going to be up against these guys who, if they don't continue these unlikely runs that they're having, might be in a slump themselves, and it's going to get harder not to pick them.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see. But I don't want to – we have a bit of a wait here between now and the next contest, so I'm trying not to go too far down the road, even towards Brazil and beyond, because I want to have things to talk about in the weeks to come.
So before we get to Rio, let's just get back to Margaret's for 1 second. I want to play you a little clip here, all right?
All right.
This is a man who seems to be in some distress.
Check this out.
Come on, let me out!
All right, so any idea what I'm showing you here, what this is?
I mean, I know it's the Drug Aware Pro, but I don't know what that's all about.
That's what that is. So that is the Drug Aware kind of like infomercial that they put out. Like, there's no mention whatsoever about what Drug Aware is when you watch that surf contest. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, why don't they have someone come on out and be like, hey, by the way, as we all know, this is the Drug Aware.
And it's interesting you point that out, because in previous years, they have had people. They would have, and it's something that I think the WSL has just lost with their more professional presentation. And even as recently as last year, although I don't know if they did it at the Margaret River event, but they'd have sort of peripheral sponsors come on. Maybe they're promoting their Safe Water initiative.
Waves for Water.
But they'd have these sort of feature interviews in the body of the contest. I know they were still running the Waves for Water.
Like, why
aren't
they running what I just showed you as one of the commercials in the event?
I don't know. Maybe they just feel it doesn't. Maybe they feel like they'd have to all of a sudden talk about Andy Irons again. They don't want to.
But why not do that then? Incorporate the message into like the whole
Drug Aware thing, though. What's interesting about it to me is it goes back to the whole reason that you're actually seeing Margie's on tour, and that's because it's a municipally, or in this, I think it's a state sponsored event. I mean, it's one of the events that doesn't actually have a sponsor.
Right.
So in the WSL world, where there's three or four events where they can't get a surf brand to be the overarching sponsor.
Right.
This is an event they know is going to be paid for by essentially the West Australian Tourism Board and the, you know, the government officials that slap this drug aware thing on it as well to make them, you know, feel better about it and to get that message across, which I'm sure it is a problem, like it is in, you know, rural areas where we live and, you know, there's lots of drugs and all that. But I just think if it wasn't for that guaranteed municipal or state sponsorship, I wonder if Margaret River would just go back to being on the WQS or maybe disappear completely.
Okay.
There's places in Australia to have a world tour contest.
Brings me, by the way, nicely to another little observation that I've been trying to kind of piece together. Margaret's hasn't been on the tour, you know, consistently throughout history. In fact, it wasn't on in 2013.
No, but it was a WQS for those years, and it was still sponsored in the same way. And
I don't
interestingly
care about the QS.
Enough, those years, and when they did get on, is in the year when all of a sudden the brands start to pull out from sponsoring because of the new WSL approach to, you know. So as the WSL starts to lose sponsors of their premier events, and you know, the like Billabong didn't sponsor as many contests. All of a sudden, you needed people to sponsor events, and then Margaret Pro moves on. You know, they're sponsored by, you know, the state, like we said. That year, Volcom sponsored Fiji. They no longer sponsor an event, so Fiji's sponsorless.
Right. Volcom, and, that's the telecom company.
No, that's the, like, most core surf brand from my youth that I can't believe you don't know.
I'm sure it's a telephone wireless provider.
I think you're thinking Volacom.
Maybe.
Or maybe that's technology.
I'm joking. But that it fits in nicely because it's like, who's the sponsor? And then Drug Aware. I was like, who? What is the sponsor? And it makes sense, though, because it's true. I mean, if it's just maybe everybody in Australia already knows what Drug Aware is, you know, and so it's just like sponsored by Coke. You know, and you don't need to kind of get in. Whoever it's, you know, important to knows, and the rest of us can just wonder what it was. It certainly had me wondering. I Googled it and found that terrifying video that I just showed you right there.
Yeah. So stay off the meth, y'all.
Yeah, and that, yeah, exactly. That's what it was. Although he did end up recovering in that video. We didn't watch the whole thing, but managed to turn himself his life around.
Man, I'm going to start smoking meth if they don't get this contest off tour.
Yeah. You don't like it, eh? You didn't like that one?
It's just, you know what? Last year was just, like, if they could run it at the box, I'm on board.
Yeah.
But that may, like, the people that live in Western Australia don't even surf main break.
WSL even tweeted out that they might be going at the box for the final.
And I know. And that was the first time I got excited all week. Todd is from, he's about an hour up the coast. He never surfs there. Like, people that are from there don't surf there.
Because
there's better places to surf all over the place. But there's not a better amphitheater for the sponsors.
Here's a clip of Sebastian Zietz talking about exactly that.
Surfing a lot, I think that has a lot to do with it, just staying in the water a lot, and tons of fun waves around here. I didn't really surf Margie's once the whole time leading up to this, so I don't know, it's just a really fun wave. And
and I love that.
The same thing.
That's what I love about Seabass. As much as I was, you know, getting into that scoring debate earlier, I got to say a couple of nice things about Seabass. Because one, the interviews throughout the competition, and especially the post-heat interview in the water and the post-heat interview on stage, were all time. I mean, this...
Did he do a post-heat interview while he was in the water because he didn't come out?
No. Well, it's this new thing. They're always trying to get the, you know, the water guy to him quickly. I think in this case, it was Peter Mell. Still there. Didn't listen to my advice from the last podcast. Anyway, and he was talking about how, he kicked Julian in the head on the paddle battle off the top, which was all time.
Yeah.
And then he just starts going, cappuccino. Cappuccino, I haven't had a coffee. I need to get a cappuccino.
Right.
It was so Spicoli. And he was like, no way. When they told him, he was like, actually, I think second in the world now. It was just hilarious. Yeah. I loved him. On stage, he was talking about how the Aussies were going to take a big chunk of his winnings in taxes. And said, so there you go. You know, government workers, you're welcome. I mean, it was hilarious. The guy just has no filter. And I mean, it comes, I don't know if you know the history of Seabass, but he's like a character that had an incredible life.
Well, that's the thing, too, is that it does seem that everybody is just happier with who's winning this year compared to last year. You know what I mean? Like, yay.
Oh, Zietz, man, this guy didn't have a passport till he was 18.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know
I did
the
hear
story?
That. Yeah, that he had, it was like, he finally got his life together and got enough ID to get on the tour.
Well, yeah, I mean, Ray, his family went from, I think they left Florida in a sailboat, just sailed to Hawaii. None of them had any documentation, like six siblings living on the beach in Hawaii.
Interesting.
And they didn't even have, he didn't even have a birth certificate. to even get a passport. That's why it took him so long to even compete in the WQS. He's a total just like, it's an amazing story.
Did they sail to Hawaii like the Polynesians did? Is this a whole like recreation of this thing?
I just think it was like the parents, you know, they had their kids. They didn't bother registering them. They just weren't for all the sort of, you know, niceties of civilized life. They just had their kids and decided they were sailing to Hawaii and got there and lived there. And then all of a sudden realized, geez, I guess it's hard to get off the island now 10 years later if you don't have a passport.
Anyway, it worked out for Zeitz, obviously. Yeah. Let me drop some knowledge on you, though, because I do feel that we need to focus on the surf fantasy aspect, you know what I mean?
I'm trying to avoid it.
This is why people are tuning in. I know, really, we're going to talk about anything, but...
Do I have any credibility?
But let me just point this out to you, because I do think that this is interesting. I took a look at the top 12 winners from last year's Margaret River, okay? So I'll just name them off really quick, okay? So we've got DeSouza, number one.
Yeah.
John, number two. Then Nat Young, Taj Burrow, Julian Wilson, Kelly Slater, Barrett. And then it was Davies, Wright, Flores, Josh Kerr, and Sebastian Zeitz. Okay, so that was your top 12 from last year's contest. How many of those 12 surfers do you think made it into the top 12 in Rio?
Oh, was it two?
Looking in ahead, you know that it's two.
Yeah,
that's the number. How did you know that?
You guessed it? Yeah. Okay. Well, there I didn't guess. I mean, I know the names, and I know there's not a lot of overlap between the two style of waves.
Yeah, but you didn't have... So can you just, if without looking at my sheet, can you tell me who won Rio? Like, give me the top five in Rio from last year.
Adriano, John. No, I can't.
You can't. You're right, because the winner was Toledo. Bede Durbridge was in the
final last year.
And then Italo Ferreira. Yeah. Wilco!
Wilco, really?
Four.
Last year in Brazil. Uh-huh. Well, that bodes well. I know we don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but that bodes well for the upcoming contest.
Oh, bro, he is staying on my team. He's staying on my team. Yeah.
I even think he surfed good in this contest. Like, I was going to bring that up as far as this contest goes.
Yep.
I mean, he lost that heat, but I think he finished with a seventh. And that's a keeper score on a world title.
Yep.
If you got two wins, that's fine.
And
that'll
it's a great score for fantasy, too. I'm nothing to sneeze at. For his price, too, I mean, I'm totally happy with that result.
No, he'll stay on the team. And I think he's
well. You know what? Why don't I just run down this list? Because people are thinking about their teams. Yeah. So, yeah, Toledo won, and he's back on.
Will he be back on? That's the interesting thing. Have you seen any video of him?
I haven't, but I know that he's at least a choice on the fantasy thing.
Yeah, but that's because when he got injured, he said he would be back on. But I was on the message boards today, and... they were asking this very question, and no one's seen any pictures of him surfing as of yet. There haven't been any clips, no Instagram, nothing. The only Instagrams you see are, him hanging out with his family. So I wonder if he will be back.
And then the question becomes, if you even have some doubt that he'll do well, is it worth keeping him off your team? Because he may be another one of those guys that gets huge pickup. And if you don't pick him, you're going to look like a genius. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's the thing. I mean, I like rooting against guys as much as I like rooting for guys. So, for instance, if I don't have John and I know everybody else does, I love watching that heat because I'm going like, come on, screw up, you know? Yeah. And then he does. I'm like, yeah, you suckers. Like, everybody lost except me because I bet against him. I find a lot of fun in that. I'm going to do that.
Yeah, that's correct. There's a lot of parallels between that and how fantasy football works, where you're not just rooting for the guys in your fantasy football team, but you're rooting against the guys that, you know, your friends.
And it makes more heats interesting too, right? Yeah. Like, that's the thing. When you watch John and then everybody has him, it's not that interesting. So going down the list, Toledo. So anyway, I don't know. I'll probably end up putting him on. Bede, you going to put him on there?
Bede's still going to be injured, I think.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure his hip's not working right
yet. You know what? That's weird. I didn't even know he was off, man. That's
how he should. Oh, don't even get me started.
Anyway, Italo. By the way, Italo was one of my only amazing picks. I had him. Only 20% did, and he delivered hardcore. He's at the very top of the rankings, and there's no way I'm going to lose him again. So he's on for sure. Although I do question his killer instinct to finish off a contest. He hasn't won one yet.
Yeah.
I could actually see him being one of these guys who can take the title without ever having won one.
Like, really?
If anyone's going to do it, it could be him. He's finishing really well. In the rankings, I think he's like third. I think he's third in the WSL rankings. You know.
Yeah, I could see it. I mean, he's a bit of a sleeper pick for me, but he's another guy that he knows how to play the game.
Sleeper pick? What are you saying, man? He's not a sleeper pick. This is the thing. It's almost like he's invisible to you, man. I'm telling you, the guy is like always making huge like progression through each contest that he's in, and you just can't see him.
Yeah.
Italo Ferreira.
No, I know. I mean, I you know what? I paid attention to him this time because I think the way some of these top numbers are performing, really he almost is going to have to be on my team. But
someone was pointing out too that he doesn't, as a goofy, he doesn't do that 12 o'clock really well. You know, when you know you look to that thing where like, does he hit it or whatever? Some people have been pointing out that he does seem to surf more horizontally, which for a goofy seems.
I think he's from the. He's a lot like Adriano, you know? I don't love his surfing, but he's always going to get the scores. Yeah. Or maybe not always, but at least this year he's been, and last year.
And he's good at finishing off waves and all that.
I mean, he's going to get two sevens, maybe gets an eight, and a lot of times that's all you need.
By the way, speaking of finishing waves, that rock seemed like to be the biggest upset element in that
whole thing. Oh my God, don't even get me started on the rock. So here's another reason. Right? I mean, I think when...
What a weird
thing. The most
thing.
Exciting thing you can talk about is the rock. At the end of the wave, I mean, what does that say about your contest? You know what I mean? It was so ridiculous.
Yeah, but
at one point, Potts compared the danger of hitting this moss-covered stone that, mind you, no one actually got injured on with the danger of Chopu.
Yeah.
Which is like, rip people apart.
Ibelli actually looked like he almost got hurt for a second.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've surfed shallow waves around here. You fall, you know, maybe you land your butt on a rock. It hurts a little bit. You know, so does stubbing your toe on the curb. I mean, but give me a break. Like, it's
I hurt my thumb on my board all the time.
I mean, I've ripped fins out on rocks, too. It's not that big of a deal. It's definitely not Chopu.
I've ripped my fins on rocks going out.
I have, too.
Anyway, because the thing is, it's true that the rock was a fun element. But then, like, guys would have good waves, and they need that finishing move, which is now so important.
Yeah.
And there's a rock. So
they just got to go for it.
So like, but there were a couple of cases where I was like, you know what? He finished that wave as best he could and then just got off. Like, you know what I mean? That technically he didn't finish the wave, but it was because the rock was there.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm like, it's judges, weird. Can you throw him a bit of a bone there?
I think there's a lot of inconsistent judging in the contest too. I mean, there always is, and it makes it harder to pick, but yeah, I mean, why can you kick out at some waves? I mean, I know why you can kick out a pipe because it's only a barrel wave.
Yeah.
But some waves, you know, you can do everything you need to do. The wave's over. You just go over the back and it's fine. Here you have to and it's because it's such a crappy wave. And if you don't do that, you only get to do two turns.
But that's the thing. And the thing is that I guess maybe some waves, do better, right? Like when you have those converging sections, that there is that critical thing where you like come off the lip. It looks good.
I got to the point this contest was so lame where I was actually judging surfers on their ability to smoothly belly ride towards the jet ski, and Parco nailed it once. Like, he should have got, I think it might have been the best move he did the whole contest.
Really? What was so good about it? What did he do?
Oh, he like
just
came
right
off
on?
Right onto his belly and literally went right up on the back of the ski without so much as paddling, just body surfed in, went up onto the sled coming off the back of the ski.
So he was on the board and he rode the board onto the sled?
Yeah. So usually it's like they have to paddle a little bit to the sled, but he just had the perfect momentum going.
Right.
Yeah, it was great. It was pretty much as good as it got.
Well, speaking of that then, one of the best paddlings I saw, I can't remember who it was. I feel like it was Wilson. As he was coming in, flipped his board around so that the fins were up. Did you see that?
Yeah, I do that at some of the places we surf when you're coming in on the rocks.
Never seen that before.
Yeah. What I'll do is because there's one place that we surf where there's a bit of a current and the rocks are really slippery. So as I'm getting in, I'll flip it upside down and then actually put my board sideways and use it like a boogie board to just come right up on it.
Really?
Yeah. You don't get to worry
sideways,
about your fins.
And because the fins are out of the water, obviously.
The fins are out of the water, but they're not in front of my face or, you know,
how much
behind
rocker
me.
Do you have on your board to be able to do that?
Not much rocker at all, actually.
Huh.
Anyway, enough about me.
Wilco, Wright, Kerr, Jadson Andre placed in the top 12.
Jadson, what happened to him? Is he still on tour?
I don't know. Jesus. I think so. Did he retire last year?
I don't know. There's so many random people on tour.
34 people. It's too many
That's
to keep
it.
Track.
Don't even get me started. Yeah. I'm going to save this debate for a podcast when we don't have as much to talk about. But I'm going to actually bolster my argument and come in with an actual strategy of exactly how many people I think should be on tour and what the structure should be as you move through the heats. Because there's just too many. It's crazy.
The number should be somewhere between what the women's are and what the men's are. So just split that difference and that's what they should be.
I'm going to come up with something 26.
Yeah, you're going to come up with the whole number. Yeah, and then maybe, I mean, if there's anything that you can do to get rid of heat 4, that would be good.
What do you think of Jack Robinson? I was talking him up a lot.
Super disappointed.
Put him on my team.
Another
super
one.
Disappointed
in
this one.
And Coffin was disappointing too.
I think on Jack Robinson, he's the type of guy, as I think about it, that you really only want to put on your team when you know the waves are going to be pumping. I mean, I was judging him on his performance at Pipe last year where he did really, really well, and judging him on, you know, the videos I've seen of him out at the box. But in hindsight, I hadn't really seen him. And I know he has an air game, but I hadn't seen him performing in a lot of gutless waves. So I probably should have been, yeah, you know, you want to talk, you know, high achievers and their habits. Maybe I should have paid a bit more attention to the swell. But then again, I thought they were going to start at the box.
Yeah, that's true. That wasn't in the conversation.
Yeah, there's so much hype. That's the thing. There's so much hype around this contest that you don't know what to believe.
Huh. Finishing off the list, because we stopped at Jadson, Ricardo Christie, so you don't need to worry about him.
Oh, my God.
Fanning, he's not back. He was ninth. John. So John came 10th, but I don't know. I mean, one thing that I just feel, too, in terms of strategy, and I didn't follow my own advice, is don't look to the past, you know? I mean, part of the reason, too, that I put John on was is that he was in the final last year, plus this about the talk, yeah, you know, the coaching. And but, yeah. So
you could flip it the other way, though, too, because some of those old, you know, stalwarts have sort of reemerged a little bit, like Parco getting a really good fantasy score.
Yeah, but the thing with him,
Julian Wilson back in the conversation.
Old stalwart, yes, but not as a high, like the thing is that you wouldn't have looked to last year and thought to yourself, ah, yes, I'll pick Parco based on what he did last year. Do you know what I mean? Like, he is almost more of one of those surprise kind of guys that came out of, I mean, obviously not out of nowhere.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Point I had him on my team because I was thinking, you know, he is good in barreling waves like the box. And he is good in sort of a sunset type wave like Margaret's River where it's open face turns. But I just didn't think he'd put two results in a row. I thought he was done.
Would you consider putting him on for a Rio?
No. Don't think so.
No. Because, I mean, my thing too, I mean, if we just look at the rankings, you know, that I feel like at this point too, this was one thing that I wanted to look at as well, is if you could look to last year and see who was in the lead, like what the leaderboard in terms of the world title race looked like, that those would be surfers that I would back. That, you know, I would like to see how they did at the end of the year. Like,
who was in sort of try to judge the consistency.
But you can't really do that. Like, you can only, like what the WSL has is, like, you can look at how they did in each event last year, but I can't see
what
they were up to
the year
at round three. What you probably could do is just watch the whole contest, and at some point they would, like, show you the leaderboard. Yeah. Like, I bet if you watch the beginning of Rio, even last year's Rio, near the beginning of that broadcast, they would probably pop up, okay, so who's in the lead right now? Like, where does the world title race look like? Yeah. And then you could use that information to see how they did at the end of the year. But that's a lot of work.
I mean, if I remember correctly, I think going into Rio last year, you had Felipe might have been on top. If not, it was Adriano who had just captured it after a win. Julian Wilson was in the running. Kelly Slater was still in the title picture.
Because I'm looking at it now. So, right. So, I mean, in the leaderboard right now, we have Wilco, Zietz, Ferreira, Andino, Parkinson, Ibelli, and Wilson. Yeah. Like, I kind of feel like I want to have all those guys on my team for this contest, except for maybe Parco. Do you know what I mean? Like, and who knows? That might even, you might even be able to get away with
you know,
doing
there
that.
There is a scenario where Seabass, and it goes back to Bede, it doesn't even get into Brazil. Like, he doesn't have a guaranteed entry as of yet.
Why?
Like,
if some injury replacements come
Well, because
back,
he's an injury replacement. So, the way it works
That's so crazy.
So, Taj, They've bumped up Taj's retirement. So instead of this idea that he announced it here and he was just going to skip a couple events and then serve Fiji, he's officially retired. They've given him a wild card for Fiji. So that frees up a spot so that they can put a Melling will be officially in for the rest of the year because he's getting Taj's spot. Stuart Kennedy gets the first injury replacement, so he's in for Owen. But if Bede was to come back, that's the spot that Seabass gets right now. And there hasn't been, I mean, I'm pretty sure Bede's not coming back. So I think Seabass is safe, at least for Brazil. But I mean, knowing Bede and how much he loves big barrels and, you know, has a history in Fiji and surfing there, being from Australia, I wouldn't be surprised if Bede tried to make his comeback at Fiji.
Yeah.
Especially if it doesn't look like sort of a code black swell where, you know, he's not going to rip his leg off again.
But wait, so, but you're saying that there's a chance that he might not make Rio?
Well, there's a chance because if Bede comes back for Rio and we don't know officially yet, then that's the injury wild card that Seabass has right now.
That's,
so he could be
out.
Can
you imagine if that happened?
It'd be a real bummer.
Second in the world.
Yeah. I mean, I think they'd have to sort it out. They'd have to give him the other wild card, but there's a sponsor wild card, so I don't know.
What are you going
to do? I mean, it's a WSL. They'll just make it up. They'll do what they want.
But I can see him dropping off, too. I mean, that's, you know, and they can drop him off. I mean, he's an injury replacement.
Yeah.
He did what he wanted to do, and then he's off, you know? That's a story, too.
And
I mean,
it's
interesting
with Seabass, too, because while he knows, I mean, to qualify for the tour next year, injury replacements do get to keep their
points.
So if he gets enough contests, he can qualify. But where he can't be sure that he's going to surf the back half of the tour, he's also having to surf all the QS primes and 10,000s. They don't call them that anymore, but you know, whatever they call them. And so I don't know. I mean, a guy like Seabass, it'll be interesting to see if he can keep it up. I mean, if that will grind him down, having to surf these extra contests in between, or maybe it'll keep him sharp and he'll just keep on a roll.
You'll keep a belly then for the next one for Rio?
Definitely keeping Kayo, having a strong look at Italo. Seabass, I don't think he has two in him. I don't think it's the same as Wilco. I think Wilco's upped his game. I think Seabass will remain, you know, inconsistent.
Yeah. I know. I feel like I want to pick him. I'm kind of trying to develop this strategy where you go with who's hot, you know? But it didn't work, I mean, for Stuart Kennedy, right? I mean, yeah. He came out firing and then has sort of like fallen off. But so he's in for Rio, right, though? He's there?
Who? Stu?
Stu.
Oh, yeah. Stuart Kennedy's the first injury replacement. He's in for Owen. Yeah. And I think you'll see him in for the rest of the year. Because unfortunately, I don't think Owen's coming back.
I might consider putting him on. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. It depends on the waves. I mean, I don't.
What are we looking at in terms of, because we're so far out, what are we looking at in terms of wave possibility?
God,
what's
man.
Like best case scenario?
I mean best we know what case worst scenario is like chunky barrels.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario is like 2 foot high waves and toxic sludge in the midst of like a government revolution.
I was going to say.
Have you been following their politics?
I have, totally, man. So yeah, Brazilian President Dilma Rousseff has suffered a crushing defeat. Just on Sunday, a hostile, takeover. She's been booted out of her presidency.
Yeah. I know. Their sports minister resigned with the Olympics coming up. That was like 2 weeks ago. They're a mess.
Plus they have Zika virus, and now it's, you know,
yeah,
it's indisputable.
Confirmed today that it definitely calls tiny heads.
Yeah. So what impact does this
have? That might be actually what happened to Jordy.
Have?
I wonder.
Is that what he has?
Maybe he had Zika.
You know, he could use a little
looking
Zika. That guy's huge, man. Any impact, do you think? Could this affect the Brazilian competitors in some sort of way? Are they going to, you know, is the nation?
I think if anything, the Brazilians will be. I mean, if they really did get there to find civil unrest and like the mass pollution that people are suggesting the water has, I think if anything, the Brazilians are used to that. Because, I mean, I've been to Brazil and it's just a shit show, man. Like, those people are used to chaos. Like, I was down there.
Way of life.
I was down there for Carnival, and it was amazing and terrifying at the same time. Like, in crowds like I've never seen, like, I saw, you know, trying to push my way through. I saw this couple get robbed on the street right in front of me, and no one really did anything to help them. But I've also met some of the friendliest locals. I surfed Itacare and up in the Bahia, and met a ton of nice locals that were super cool. But the cities, man, like, I was in Salvador, which I think is the second largest city, and that's nothing compared to Rio. So, I mean, if there is massive civil unrest in Rio, I think the Brazilians will be, like, just used to the chaos. And it could actually
work in their favor.
Work mentally on the folks that aren't used to that sort of
wildness. I can
see,
too, that the Brazilian surfers may want to show that, hey, like, we're still great surfers. Yeah. We're great competitors. And, you know, what's happening politically and otherwise in our country doesn't mean that we can't, you know, achieve at the highest level. So do you want to talk about Medina at all? You know, he did well.
Yeah,
this contest.
You know, I think Gabriel will still be on my team. I mean, if we're talking to team, but talk about how he did in the contest, I think... Oh, man. Like, he was just a hard heat.
Hot
he came up against, yeah, but he came
Even
up against Italo.
Contest.
Like,
yeah.
I knew I had given some serious thought to how Italo performed, and I'm remembering this is why, because he lost out to Italo in a tight heat. But the way I think about Gabriel's, he surfed well. I mean, he gave me a score. I mean, I didn't do good, but of the people I had that gave me a half decent score.
Yeah, focus on the positive.
Yeah, you know, he was sort of there. He had, you know, he almost had 2.7, so it's not too bad. He wasn't that far behind Italo. But with him, I just think when I look at the people that are sort of still in this like leaderboard scenario that we were just going down.
Yeah.
And like you talk about
it
sometimes.
He's not there,
but he's close.
Yeah.
I mean, when I think of
who. Is he in the conversation?
He's in the conversation. And when I think of who at the end of the year I could actually see being a world champ, I could see him doing it. Maybe it's because he's done it.
Yeah.
But
he needs to do it now. He's got to do it in Rio.
Yeah, and I think you'll see him come strong in Rio.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe
I hope so. I might reconsider all this in 3 weeks. Who knows?
Anything else we want to touch on?
We talked about Taj a little bit.
Yeah, you said that there are things to talk about in terms of Taj. I mean, we made so much
fun
of him
retro.
last episode with him talking about how his family is such a drain on his surfing career.
Well,
it's official.
It definitely was. He definitely didn't wait around to figure it out. He's just gone. I mean, I don't know. I love Taj. You know, Taj
so
is like
the
eternal.
By the way, so
Grom.
Is he out now? He's not surfing nothing.
No, he's gonna come back for Fiji. They've sort of made that concession to him as a way to just get Melling on for the rest of the year.
Right, because so, at first he was going to stay on for a little bit.
Well, he was going to skip Brazil and then go Fiji and then retire.
There's people that are doing this, eh? Like Fanning. Everybody's like, I can take or leave some of the events.
I mean, you know, it's the reason why more people watch like professional bowling web streams and surfing. I mean, it's really...
Is that true?
As far as it is true. I've heard that quoted in the past when they've looked at streaming numbers for the WSL. Mm. It's a sport, but it's not. And it was actually interesting that Seabass had a nod to this. Like, people that complain about the tour, complain about being on tour, and it was really cool. He's just like, it's the best job in the world. Because it really is. I mean, traveling around and surfing these waves,
yeah,
it's so fun. And there's not that element that I think a lot of other sports would have. I think the only pressure is the pressure you put on yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have thousands of fans cheering for you. You may have some financial pressures, but... Really, I mean, if you've been a big enough surf bum that you've got good enough to become a pro, whether you're making a million surfing or you know, $60,000 a year surfing, you're cool, man.
Like, 'cause you at some point in your life were sleeping on a couch.
Yeah, and then the alternative is like pounding nails or working in like some industry job where you really are going to be behind a desk.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's true. Like, I think of tennis too. Like, can you imagine like a top tennis star, you know, just picking and choosing events? They could probably, they must have more pressure from their sponsors too.
Yeah.
Like, their sponsorship deals. And I guess too, the thing with surfing compared to tennis is that you can't go and do a free tennis somewhere and give your sponsor some exposure that way.
You can't like do trick shots.
Yeah, just be like, hey, I'm gonna just go play with me and my buddies, you know, me and Serena Williams are gonna have like a little like a contest in my backyard.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Jordy, we didn't really talk much about Jordy. He was another guy I had on my team.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, because the thing is that he didn't do well in the first contest, and I had him, I think, and then I dropped him, and then he did well, and now it feels like he's got the heat. I feel like I want to put him back on.
I think he might be, like, similar to the argument I made about John. Like, I think he's a good surfer, but I think when the waves aren't cooperating, I mean, the heat he lost out on, that round five heat, had dreadful waves. Mm. I went back and had another look at it again last night, and that's his problem, because He has bad wave selection and heat strategy at the best of times. So when you mix that in with inconsistent surf, I mean, it's just tough. Mm. So he's the type of guy I really think I'm going to have to be strong in the future. And like, if it looks consistent and good, maybe, but otherwise just don't bite at it.
He did come in fifth at Rio in 2014.
Yeah.
By the way, you know how I'd made that remark about how only 2 out of 12 surfers from Margaret's to Rio stayed in the top 12?
Yeah.
In 2014, 7 did.
Huh.
So it's not always that you can't keep it. So basically, do you know that Perez in 2014 won Margaret's, then won Rio?
Yeah, he went on a bit of a run there. Right. They were talking about him having world title hopes. Yeah. But
and then Slater.
And maybe that's
Slater
what he's saying
Slater
about
was
Wilco
third.
Next year.
Yeah. Who else stayed on? Beat Durbridge, by the way. Fourth in Margaret's and then went down to seventh in 2014 from Margaret's.
Bead was on tour 2 years ago, I carried Bead for almost the whole season. And he got serious points out of him.
That's the thing. If you just got those workhorse guys.
I know. But it's hard to know who they're going to be.
Parco came ninth, by the way, in 2014 at Rio.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe. I mean, you know, it all depends on the waves.
Here's something. I'm dropping ADS for my team. That's it.
Really?
Yeah.
Think I had him on my team, and I think I might keep him because he did exactly what you expect him to do at this contest.
Not well.
No. Well, he got beat out.
What did he come? He didn't do well in this contest.
No, but he got it. Oh, that was the other guy I wanted to talk about. He actually did do well in the heat he lost. He got, you know, 2 high 7s, which given the quality of the waves were like as good as it was really getting.
Yeah.
But he got beat out by Leo Fioravanti.
Right. Who was just
cannonball,
fire. Wrecking ball.
I think he actually might, I'm hoping they find a way to get him into Brazil. Because he's a guy that I think, based on the way he's surfing here and the incredible success he's having this year on the WQS so far and some junkier surf, I think he would be a prime pick for Brazil if he gets on there.
I wonder where, there he is, 2% of players
so that's
had
how,
that guy on.
You know,
that's
the
lowest
that got
I've
the
ever
big
seen.
Scores in this contest, or he was probably a good way to go.
That guy. If you had that guy, it'd be interesting to see.
Well, because everyone went Jay Davies and Robinson. Yeah.
You know, one
his
thing
mother.
in terms of the psychology of the game too. Like sometimes you really beat yourself up when your team doesn't do well.
Yeah.
But in this instance, even the guys that I was toying with, like, you know how you have those guys you're like, should I or shouldn't I? And then when you don't and they do well or vice versa, you kind of beat up on yourself a little bit.
Yeah.
In this case, even the guys that I was thinking of putting on, but didn't. Even they didn't do well. Yeah. Well, you know what I mean? So I was like, man, I didn't have a chance. Yeah. Like, I wasn't even thinking about the guys that did well, really.
It's so hard to pick this year because, I mean, and that's the other thing. Like, I feel like I was just sort of formulating this idea in my head as we talk, but I think at the next contest, I might just sort of throw the numbers out altogether as a start, because really you could afford almost anyone at this point. It doesn't even matter. There's so many options and so few big, like, top value surfers. And I'm going to make a list of people that I definitely don't want on my team. And then I'm going to take the players that are left.
You start with the negative and without, get them out.
Yeah. Get rid of all those guys. So mark John John off, mark the guys that I just aren't even in the picture. And then sort of mark a lot of the other usual suspects out, you know, and then just look at who's left and just take a chance on a couple guys. Yeah.
Well, it's the difference too.
That's the only way you'd end up with a team that had Fioravanti on it.
Yeah. The big difference too. Exactly. And the thing is that the way that you play, if you're either playing for overall, like at the end of 11 contests, or if you're playing, because we play, I know that you and I, because we put money on each event, that I'm always taking risks, right? Because
and
I want to have
that
dark house.
Yeah. I think I need to do more of that, because I am thinking long game. Yeah. Especially coming off that 1,000, I immediately started thinking
about Turtle Bay.
I want to win my, well, not Turtle Bay, but my personal clubhouses, how I can get, because the clubhouses I'm in, the way they work is there's a prize per contest, but there's also a prize for winning the overall title. That's the way we split up the pot. So
a little bit of
that overall can pay back your entry.
The only thing
fees.
I can say is that last year I was playing for, like, I was basically, my strategy was to win individual contests because the money was on that. But in doing so, I still came like 600.
How much money
overall.
Do I owe you? I owe
you
money
a
now.
Ton of money.
Like 30 bucks?
US.
I'm waiting till the exchange rate improves.
Why don't
pay
you
back.
Don't worry. Just why don't you win one of these things, and then I'll just you know give you what's left over, and that's how it'll work.
You'll have a better life. Yeah, I don't know, man.
Here's an idea, by the way. You know what they should do? They should mic the surfers.
Well, that'd be all right.
Don't you think that'd be cool?
I'd love to hear what Julian and
they're out there talking.
Seabass were saying when they were
man.
In that paddle battle. Mm-hmm. That would be really interesting.
Yeah, and they could do it. Like, there's no reason why they couldn't do it. I mean, maybe there would be, you put the whole broadcast on like a 10-second delay or something like that.
Oh man, that'd be hilarious.
I just think because there's a lot of downtime. I just think there'd be a lot of interesting conversation.
You're right. I think they should take Potts's mic away, and they should take Peter Mell's mic away, and just give it to the two surfers.
Exactly. The other thing they need to do, I don't know if you noticed this, but they need to figure out how to make that drone work better. Do you not see that when you're watching that it always, like, that the drone footage refreshes slightly? You haven't seen that?
I've never noticed
that. You've never noticed any difficulty with the drone? It's always looked perfect for you.
I've never thought about the drone, man.
I look at the drone whenever they go to the drone.
That's
I'm
why Blair's
myself,
in charge of quality control here on the podcast.
That drone,
details, man.
That drone needs work. Another thing, by the way, that they included that I haven't seen that they did this year is the waiting for scores banner. Did you not know? Huh. That's new. Really? Like, there's like a little red thing that comes up and it says waiting for scores just above the score box there. Huh. When there are scores that have yet to be determined, it says waiting for scores.
I guess the idea is to make it more clear if you're not paying super attention whether that score has been dropped in or not.
Exactly.
And that's actually useful, because I've found myself in the past thinking, you know, is that, especially in a contest where you get a lot of waves, is that that wave or was that the wave, you know, after it? So, yeah, that could be useful.
No,
I like
totally.
When they show the judges' replays, too.
Yeah.
Because I like to see that, like, oh, this is one the judges are having a close look at.
Here's something that, speaking of the replays, that they were talking about. They might have talked about this more at Bell's, but they were talking about how far away the judges are. And so they were talking about, like, oh, well, you know, maybe this type of turn works better in this contest versus this one because the judges are so far away. Do you think the judges are watching at all through anything but what basically the broadcast is? Because that's kind of what I'm thinking.
They are actually, and in fact, I don't know if this is the case, but I don't think the judges have access to as many angles as the broadcast does, and I think that's done on purpose. I think they're only allowed to look at the wide, straight-on angles. So that's
true,
because
a camera might not
similar.
Get everyone, so like you might see what one guy does inside the tube, but the camera didn't get it.
Oh, and especially
and
when
fair.
It comes to barrels. I mean, if you're on a slight angle behind a barrel, it can look like you're totally deep, and the nose of your board can be sticking out. Or if you're looking straight on into a barrel, it can look like you're barreled when you're not. So I think I'm almost certain, unless they change it
this year. But that still doesn't quite rule out the idea that they're not looking through a camera most of the time. It may be that they just have the one locked off camera. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're saying that, like, there's this idea that the judges are so far away that they may not be seeing like a subtlety within a carve. But in my mind, like the judges replay that we keep seeing them watching, I'm kind of guessing that that's what they're watching the whole contest through that camera.
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think it feels as far away when you're actually there.
They keep saying that. This was at Bell's anyway. They were saying it was really far away.
It'd be interesting
to
see.
Can we meet the judges, please? How about that?
Exactly.
Hey,
we're at the
judges' table.
Just show them to me. Like, I just want to see who these degenerate, like, sloths that they've, like, dragged out. Because you know they don't pay them anything. Like, who could you find? I mean, I guess surfers don't have
as
families.
As long as if they're paying my ticket, man, I will, you know... With a per diem for whatever the meals costs.
Yeah. And then what else do you need to get there? I don't know, man.
It'd be tedious, man. Can you imagine trying to score like an event? I bet they even switch judges out. I bet they have like more than... I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Don't know
Secret society.
Anyway, we've drifted off again. Not talking too much about fantasy.
Yeah, it's the contest's fault.
Yeah.
So
join the clubhouse. By the way, did you want to say more about scoring inconsistency? Because I was going to play you like another... A little clip here, all right?
Yeah, let's hear it.
All right, so here
we'll
go.
We'll go out on this. Okay, chat, and then we're done.
Okay, so you watch this, all right? Here we go.
All right, Vince Carter with his first on the final round.
Timeout. Can I take a timeout?
This is Vince Carter in 2010, or maybe it might be in the year 2000. Anyway, it's the slam dunk contest. He's of course was a superstar for the Toronto Raptors. Slam dunk contest, does this crazy dunk.
Yeah.
Oh, and everybody's looking at it going, what the heck was that? He stuffed his whole arm in the basket. So he dunks, and then he hangs from the rim.
Okay.
Okay. From his elbow.
Yeah.
And hangs there for a second.
I watched it.
You watch
it. I know what you're talking about.
You remember that?
Yeah.
That's right. Okay. So that was a long time ago, and you remember it because it was like, what the heck was that? It was, you know. Anyway.
Struggling to find the analogy here.
It reminds me a little bit of this.
Wow. That was really different, wasn't it? That was something we don't see very often. Air rotation from John, but it was so swift. I mean, he literally did a pirouette in the air.
It was cool, but how's it going to score? Pete Mel, did it look good from your angle?
It did, you know, and it had to be creative because that wave had a bunch of froth on the face.
John's wave, he basically did that nice flat 360 right at the top of the wave. I was talking to you about this earlier, right? Like that was the thing is that, and what I want to say, originally I was going to say that, the judges should reward that more, but they gave him a 787, which is pretty good.
Yeah, I actually, after the conversation we had about it, I went back and watched the heat analyzer, and I think they probably got it right.
Yeah,
there was
I think
really,
they did too.
He got every bit of that 7 points he got for that one air, which was, I liked it. I know it wasn't
the
highest air, but
it was
super smooth. It was in a very, you know, if he had fell, the wave is blown. So it's in a critical part of the wave.
Exactly.
Not everyone can do it. I mean, lots of people are like, oh, anyone could do that air.
But that's why I brought up the
Not
Vince
true.
Carter thing, right? Is that it wasn't that was super hard. Like, I bet that if you asked a basketball player to do it, they could. To just go and, you know, slam it. You know, it's just about jumping high, right? But he, you know,
like
had
the creativity
the
in the
to
moment.
Do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's the thing. And so John pulls off this like really unique, I mean, it's still the same move, but it was in a different part of the wave that you wouldn't normally see in a contest. And I just, you know, you can tell from the reaction, even from the commentary, that they thought it was cool.
Oh, it was super cool. And
it was
super smooth.
Cool.
Yeah.
And it was like, and that's the thing, like landing it so high on the wave, you know, and it just that beautiful transition. Yeah. It was so awesome.
It reminded me a little bit of skateboarding, like when you'll watch a skateboarding video, and I don't watch any skateboard contests, so I don't know if they don't even really have them judged in the same way that surfing does.
Like X Games,
but it almost reminded me of like a smooth little like alley-oop or like you know, just a little cool move that you just throw in there that's super cool, and then you just keep flowing. But you know, if you try to do that, not everyone can.
Yeah, it's a
Parco, and then at the same token,
yeah,
if you want to talk Parco, like desperately tries to do the air at the end of one of his waves and just does a straight air, gets no air, and people are like,
whoa.
Well, at least he tried.
Yeah,
good, you know, for you, good Marco. For him. You know, it's nice to see he's pushing it.
There
I
you
mean,
are.
He's not pushing anything. Like
see?
The progression is
That's
being
why
pushed
maybe
by
you
John.
Should have
John
Parco on your team for
makes
Rio.
It look too easy.
He gets the benefit of the doubt. He
it.
Gets the benefit of the doubt. Right?
Yeah.
That I think in the judges' minds, you know, that they kind of they see the heat on this guy, and then if they see him trying hard, they're gonna be like, hey, Parco, let's give this guy the benefit of the doubt.
I think my point on the inconsistency, though, and I think there is a lesson to be taken from it when it comes to picking your fantasy surf team, is that it seemed like for certain people, they're rewarding, you know, aggression more than others. So I think if you look at like Kyle Abelli is an example, you can look at Seabath. They're, you know, even Wilco in a lot of ways, they're really rewarding the like a really hard slashing sort of turn.
They like their aggression.
Yeah.
Those guys' aggression.
Yeah. But then, and they don't seem to be rewarding in every case, at least the sort of, even if it's a powerful turn, if it's too smooth. So I almost wonder if you're looking for guys that are going to go all the way and sort of win those really close heats. Like if you have two guys, and I'm not saying, I mean, you could easily pick this argument apart because guys like Julian was smooth, Parco was smooth, and they went far. But I think if you're looking at a heat or if you're looking between maybe two guys, think, so which of these two guys, if they're in a tight heat, are going to be able to lay down that really sharp, aggressive, almost like overly try-hard type of hack that seems to impress the judges when it's a close heat.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the guy you want to pick.
So would Wilson fall into that category? Because I feel like he is on the smoother side of things.
I don't think Julian Wilson would. And I think that's what, you know, set them
that's
apart.
What, and that's what keeps him from going all the way.
Yeah. I think when it really comes down to it, the judges
tend
to
be like a monster.
Yeah. The judges tend to reward those people that look like they're really trying and they gutted it out. Yeah. But they don't seem to be rewarding someone like a John John who casually throws the 360 air, rides out of it, another smooth hack, and then, well, fell on the reentry, unfortunately. But.
All right. We've talked enough. Let's get out of here.
Yeah. So we'll be back. I don't know if we'll be back next week, but we'll be back definitely maybe a sort
we'll
of a
up,
couple weeks and
yeah,
then
no,
another
we'll...
check-in right before Brazil.
No. We'll do one more before Brazil.
Just one more?
I think so. It starts in 21 days,
all
right?
Well,
so
if you can't
we'll drop another podcast. As soon as we have a firm idea on what the conditions are like for Rio, then we'll do it. So I'd say 5 days before 21 days. So I would say like in 2 weeks, give or take.
All right.
2 weeks, man. That's a lot.
Yeah. Sounds good to me. I'm enjoying it. If you need it sooner than that, if you can't wait, let us know. Hit us up on the email.
Yeah.
Join
surf,
us in the clubhouse.
Surffantasy@gmail.com. Yeah. The podcast clubhouse is called Surf Fantasy Podcast. If you win, you get something in the mail from us.
Something in the mail.
So let's look forward to Rio. Check this out, by the way. At the beginning of this podcast, I showed you what it was actually the end of the heat and how much excitement was going on the win. Sebastian Zietz wins. So this is that was the highest level of excitement that I could pick as a clip for the beginning of the podcast. Listen to this. This is the final going into Rio last year with Toledo. Here's the energy that we can expect for that contest. We'll see you next time.
Later.
Hear the horn sound. A 35-minute final. Felipe times the start. Backside whip. Carving off the top. He's looking to finish strong. Blows the talent.